from Courtside of the Virtual Hardwood, it's the NLSC Podcast, episode number 369. Andrew with you once again. I'm Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. My co-host and fellow NLSC team member is Derek. He is DP3 in the forum and DP384 on Twitter. Good to talk to you again, Derek.
No, I'm happy to be here again. I actually wanted to kick off this show talking about a issue that I actually found in one of my favorite games right now, proving that there is no perfect sports game, folks. But then also wanted to ask you if you found a similar issue in one of your favorite basketball titles from the past.
Sure.
So, I'm playing MLB The Show 20, and my brother and I are about 15 games into a season. And one of the things we found out, you know, about halfway through was that players' stamina was running out incredibly fast, and they were tired before the start of every game. And when I say tired, I mean stamina, energy cut in half. And in this game, when you take the field and your players are already tired, stamina dramatically impacts their performance, and it can really affect if you win or lose. In fact, both of us, we have separate teams we're using in the season, and we both lost our last three games with our teams against each other, and a big portion of it is because of stamina. So the issue that we found with MLB The Show 20, which is one of the best games we've ever played, one of the best sports games I think ever made, is there is no stamina control in the sliders. They have a stamina control for the pitchers, but not for the hitters. So you can't, like, lessen the amount they get tired. You can't change fatigue levels, etc., with the sliders. For a game as deep as it is, this is an incredibly strange oversight. And what you find is that in baseball, if you really look at it, most players over the course of history, you know, they try to play every game of the season, and you see them playing around 140, as long as they're not injured, 145, 150, or like up to 160 games. But the way this is designed in the game, players get tired way too fast, and they faster than they do in real life. So it dramatically impacts the win-loss column, and it impacts the stats and all of that stuff. So what I got thinking was, you're really into NBA 2K11 right now, mm-hmm. and you're creating a roster for the, you know, for like a 1920 or 2021 roster for NBA 2K11. Can you think of a design flaw or a flaw similar to what we ran into with MLB The Show 20 in NBA 2K11, one that makes you go, ugh, this hurts because the game is so well-rounded and I didn't expect to run into this?
I don't know about one in 2K11. I have noticed some weird things with when it reorders the rosters and it tries to rebuild a rotation, that sometimes it does undesirable things there, although it may just be because I haven't finished doing all the ratings yet. There is a fatigue issue in Live 07 and 08 PC, where they took out the slider. Again, they took out the fatigue slider, turned it into an on-off option. In fact, they had to patch in the on-off option into 07 PC, and couldn't do anything on the PS2 Xbox version. So players just don't fatigue properly. The only way to fix that is to actually adjust the fatigue ratings, which of course affects overalls and all kinds of things in that regard. But an issue similar to that, where it's a favorite game, where I love the game but it is an issue, is Live 06 PC, which, as I mentioned before, one of my all-time favorite games, one of the strongest releases in the NBA Live series, but it has what I call the primacy recalculation bug. And primacy, for people who don't know, is the rating in Live 06 and other lives of that vintage that determined how many touches a player would get, how often they would shoot, both in simulation and also when during gameplay. So the higher the primacy, your top scorers in the league, your Allen Iversons at the time, Kobe Bryant, etc., would have a high primacy rating, usually maxed out at 99 because they get that many touches, take that many shots. They are the first option far and away. So 06 had an issue where it would recalculate the primacy when there was a trade or when there was an injury. And the reason it did this was to readjust redistribute the shots, especially in the case of injury, because you've got a player that's out. The problem is that player would also have their primacy dropped. So when they came back, you'd have a Kobe Bryant with a primacy of, 10 or 15 instead of 99. So suddenly, when Kirby comes back from injury, he's not taking the shots anymore. So he becomes much easier to play against. So that's probably it's one of the biggest problems with 06. So what we had to do on PC, and again, you can't do this on console, was to make a batch file that restored primacy ratings to what they were before and distribute that with the roster update. So basically tell people, look, if you're playing a dynasty mode, every so often run this primacy fix just to fix these ratings, because otherwise they will get recalculated, and there's a reason for it, but they don't get changed back, and it's too harsh. So yeah, it does actually mess up dynasty, so you have to do that, run that fix on PC if you want to have good stats and proper gameplay throughout throughout the course of a season.
It's wild what we can do on PC that they can't do on console.
Fixes,
That'd
yeah.
have to be pretty frustrating that it couldn't do those fixes. I do want to say though, I think I told you this, that I was playing Live 06 recently on the PlayStation 2, and one thing I got to say about the Live series where they just did a complete 180, and that's when the series started going downhill, is they were making steady improvements each year. I was playing, if you go from Live 2003, Live 2004, then Live 2005, Live 2006, you can pretty much see improvements every single year. And Live 06 is just a really solid basketball title. It does a lot of things right. The pace is a lot more fun than NBA Live 2004. It has the freestyle superstars, all of that stuff. And then what you saw was the complete opposite. After Live 06, they started going downhill with the series and taking features away they had in the past and all of that stuff. So it was just why it's just every time I you bring up Live 06, I get a little bit disappointed, to be
It's
honest,
one of those
because
turning points. We talked about that on the when we did our 25th anniversary retrospective, the two-part episode, that it really is that turning point. And you look at what would have happened if they'd stuck with Live 10, of course, instead of going to Elite 11. That's a big what if. But a few years earlier, if they had brought over 06, if they'd brought it in with a full Dynasty mode, with Legends, with historical, with retro jerseys, all these things that they had in the PC and PS2 and Xbox version, if they launched with that, with the new graphics and some of the improvements, and of course the temple and everything they did on 360, I think they would have had a very strong start to the generation. I don't think they go in necessarily the direction that they did with 07. They don't have to try and rebuild things, or maybe they still do and they mess it up anyway. But I think if they launched 06 as a more of a full product and got really good ratings for that, I think that would have said to them, hey, let's stay the course, let's build on this, because people really like this. And it wasn't the gameplay. People think it was the gameplay in 06 on 360. Gameplay is solid, as we've talked about in recent episodes. It's the lack of features, the lack of content, and that's really what kills a game in the 2000s. You could get away with that much earlier. 10 years before that, you could get away with having less content, because that was anything that had more than a season mode was pretty special, in games of that vintage. But by the turn of the millennium, you had to be doing all the things you were doing before. And it's why you have to do it today as well, and why Live has struggled, probably one of the reasons Live has struggled in this past generation.
yeah, and Live 06 not having a really good camera view to play on,
No instant replay,
lack of
yeah.
no instant replay, stuff like that. So MLB The Show 20, that was one of the issues I found. It got me thinking. Also, I wanted to point out, I was going in to edit players, and I also didn't see a fatigue option when you create your player either, which is strange. So you can't have their fatigue higher to try to offset it, maybe put your players like in the 90s or something like that on a rating in order to make their fatigue better. Like, I didn't see a fatigue option for the players in edit player or create player or in the sliders. It got me thinking, with some of my favorite games, stuff that, were there sliders that were in my favorite basketball games, were there sliders that I wish they had? That were missing. And one of the things that I wish they had in like NBA 2K17 and NBA 2K16, although the gameplay is pretty good by default, I want to point out with both of those games, I think it's very solid and the pace is solid and the feel is pretty good. But one thing that I think they improved on with games like 2K 18, 19, 20, and 21 were the player movement without ball sliders. And they added those to the bottom of the slide when you go into the sliders, and it's movement with ball, without ball, acceleration with ball, without ball, stuff like that. And I do think that that adds a whole new dimension to being able to customize, you know, how the players move. Because how many times have you played a game in the past where the defense on the fast break, like, doesn't catch up fast enough to the ball handler, and there's like zero chance of you getting like a chase down block?
It's either right? that, or it's too easy for the defense to catch up. It's to get that balance. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. By having those sliders in there, and that was a good implementation by 2K. By having those sliders in there, it allows you to basically make up for that difference and make it so that movement without the ball has a more realistic and better chance of catching up to that ball handler. So that's something that I wish some of the past 2K games had, the ones that didn't have it.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of sliders here and there and the lack of options to customize the gameplay has definitely been a problem over the years. To not have a visible fatigue rating that you can, or an accessible fatigue rating, I should say, to edit is a big oversight there. I'm surprised that the show has that issue. As I said, that was the only way we could really fix rotations and fatigue in 07 and 08 PC. And even then, it was a band-aid fix, I feel. A lot of the tweaked, what we used to call the tweaked rosters, the tweaked ratings rosters, where we would make all these mass adjustments to ratings, I feel a lot of them were placebos to a large extent, because it came down to the engine, really. And sure, maxing out ratings or dropping them to the lowest, it could help in some situations, but it really was, I think, we imagined some of the results, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't think there is a game, the best of the best, they've still got some issue, or they're missing something. I mean, even if you look at a 2K11, how they brought in the Jordan Challenge, which was fantastic, but they lost the All-Decade team. So then we had all these unused faces in the game, some of which didn't have arm textures, like your Clyde Drexler and whatnot, from the 90s and the 80s. Clyde Drexler were missing arm textures, proper arm textures. So, yeah, you had issues like that. But, you know, but with that being said, you know, the best of the best do still tend to be great games, obviously, and we love them, but... Yeah, there's always been one thing, I think, even in the best of the best games, there's just that one issue, that one bit of missing content, or that one bug, or something like that, that's just that slight imperfection that, you know, you get around it, but you do remember it all the same.
Outside of it missing right stick dribbling, what is one thing that you would change about NBA 2K11?
I think I would expand the historical content, to be honest. And that's probably because I'm also looking at historical rosters I could possibly make with it. It's just having them in the game. I think they when they expand on that in 2K12 with NBA's Greatest, and they went to the trouble of getting at least 8 or 9 players per team, it also gave those retro teams more replayability, more replay value, because you had that full team to play with. Once you've defeated the Jordan Challenge, you certainly can play it again, but then if you want to play with those teams just as an exhibition game, and there is an option to do that within the Jordan Challenge menu, just to play a straight-up exhibition game with those teams at any time, it's not as fun because you don't have those full teams.
I can agree with that. What about from a gameplay perspective?
I'd probably put a shot meter. I'd probably put a shot meter. Or make the mechanics so that it's a bit more... A bit less of a dice roll, or there's at least an indicator on the optimal release point, which they did in 2K14 or 13. They added that flash to the player indicator. If you're not going to do a full-on shot meter release mechanic, one of the problems with those earlier games is that it felt very random. If you had an animation, because it's very animation heavy, the shooting of a Bill Cartwright or a Shaq or something, trying to get the timing down with that was a lot of, you know, quite literally hit and miss, a lot of trial and error to get the timing down on that. So it was much harder to pick up and play with a team that you didn't play with as much. I think that's something that the current approach to shooting mechanics has actually improved upon, the pick up and play aspect with any team.
So when you talking about that made me think of one of my biggest issues with NBA 2K19, which I think is overall a pretty solid title, is, you know, we play with the shot meter off. I have a similar issue with 2K19 that you have with 2K11, where finding the optimal release point feels almost impossible at times. And the reason is because all the shots just kind of feel rushed, and it's not a consistent like release point. And you're not expecting, because we play with user timing, I'm not expecting a consistent release point all the time because everybody has their different shooting forms. But with certain players, it feels like the release point is when their elbows are starting to go up into their release. Sometimes it's, you know, when the ball is just about to be released by a player. It just feels like it's not consistent. And like I said, the shot's feeling rushed and whatnot. So I would say that your issue with 2K11 is probably similar to the issue that I'm running into with 2K19. I find it very hard to find the proper release point.
And it was a problem with those earlier ones, along with the dribbling. But you know, that being said, 2K11 is still more than playable. You know, I do, and it's a game that since I've gotten more used to the 2K style, that I've developed more of an appreciation for, and always recognized its greatness, but have been able to really appreciate personally and go back and finish the Jordan Challenge and, of course, do the rosters now and have a game with it every so often. And you know, these games do become part of your retro gaming rotation. It's crazy that that game is now over 10 years old.
It's wild. I do want to say something. The defense, and I think you can appreciate this, the defense in NBA 2K11, the AI is a lot better, in my opinion, than the newer games. Than 2K20 and 2K21. I feel like the defense rotates better. There's not as many exploits. You're not able to just run by the defense. You can't just go wide on the fast break and score and all of that stuff. I find that the defense in NBA 2K12, NBA 2K11, NBA 2K10, even going back to like NBA 2K8, is just stronger. The defense is stronger in those games, and the AI is stronger.
I mean, the defense in the NBA was better then too, one might say. So, you know.
Yeah, no, I know you keep bringing that up. You're like, well, maybe they're just trying to make it realistic. But even in the
unintentionally so, maybe.
Yeah, but in the NBA now, you still can't just like go wide on the baseline and just dunk.
True. It's definitely more than it's, you know, more than I am being a little facetious in that. But that being said, yeah, it's. It does reflect some of the reflects an all-star game, if nothing else, but which is a topic for holding court, perhaps, which we can get back onto it at some point in the near future as well. Want to talk about modding this week? This is something we've been talking about. Obviously, much Modness has just wrapped up as we get into April. But before we get into that, I just wanted to correct myself from last week. I did talk about trying to collect NBA 06 because we talked about Sony's NBA series, which began with NBA 06 officially. It traces its roots back to their earlier shootout series, of course. But I did look it up, Derek. 06 was a North American exclusive, only an NTSC release. So it wasn't released in the PAL regions. From the looks of things, only 08 was. So with my PS3, I've been able to import 07, 08, and 09. But yeah, 06 for the PS2 is not viable, and there was no PAL version. So it's one of those. It's quite weird, actually, that an NBA game, I mean, the college games obviously couldn't be licensed outside of the US and Canada, which is why they weren't worldwide releases. But it's very strange to see that there are a few NBA releases, including, for that matter, the second NBA courtside game with Kobe Bryant, that were actually US exclusives. It's interesting that it happens with NBA games, but there's been a few.
You wouldn't expect that, especially because it's been such a global game.
Exactly, yeah.
You would expect them to want them to have, you know, the game to reach as many people as possible. So, yeah, that is actually surprising.
But with that being said, that is why it's not in my collection, why it won't be in my collection anytime soon, unfortunately. But I'm sure I'll find something else, some obscure game to add. You know, I'm sure there's something I don't own already, Derek.
I mean, we don't have all of them. I mean, I can still think of many that I need to get. And one of the ones I want to get back, now that I have the Super Nintendo, is I kind of want to get Looney Tunes B-Ball back. Because I do think that that's a pretty good game.
That's kind of a hard one to track down, at least. Well, I have to look at PAL versions. Although, actually, no, I do have a Universal Adapter now. I could play the US version on my PAL Super Nintendo. Did you see Cavs 4872 post about Disney Sports Basketball in the forum?
I did. I saw it get brought up. I saw the price tag on it.
Mm.
Which I think what it was, you said it was a few thousand dollars.
It's
right?
It's about a thousand Australian. It's usually at least 450 to 500 US, but it does go higher on eBay. Yeah.
So I don't know enough about the game, but it's intriguing. Whenever I see a game priced at that, it makes me think that it was something that is incredibly rare to get your hands on. So I don't, like I said, I don't know enough about the game. Yeah.
So before we get into the modding, I might as well share the story now. So I looked into it and I replied to the topic. You can join in at any time in the other basketball game section in the NLC forum, of course. It's so Disney Sports Basketball was released for the GameCube and I believe the Game Boy Advance back in 2002. And it's a Jam ripoff, another Jam clone, essentially, with Disney characters, as you might expect. But it was reviewed very poorly, not very well received, didn't sell very well, so it is kind of a rare game. Now, up until about 2015 or so, even though it was still rare, it wasn't really a collector's item yet, so it was apparently still going for about 15 to 30 US, which, for a rare game, is not too bad, obviously. That's very affordable as a collectible. But around about 2017, people started to realize how rare it was, how obscure and difficult to get their hands on. So suddenly the prices, and this happens a lot in retro collecting, just shot up because suddenly it's become this rare must-have. So it's gone from a 15 to 30 US dollar game to at least 450 to 500 and sometimes even more.
See, that's incredibly impressive. I think you said that one of the, was it college sports, college basketball 2K8, was it?
So
which one was it? That was
2K3, college basketball 2K3, the first game in 2K's college game. The GameCube version of that, it was the only version that was released on GameCube, 2K, the 2K3, the first one. And so it's become incredibly rare. It's been known to be at least be listed at as much as 20,000 US dollars, but it's gone for thousands because it is very rare. It's the only GameCube release for that series.
Down payment. That's a down payment. On
it is. Yeah, that's NBA League 11 market stuff.
Yeah, that's insane. I'm all set.
Yeah.
No need. Yeah, I'm not. I'm a collector, but I'm not doing that.
That's thing, ridiculous. You know, I wish that I had been able to track down a copy of Elite 11, knowing now that I would have a PS3 years later, if I'd been able to import that at some point when it was a couple of $100, I would have done that for a couple of $100 back then, but now it's, you can't get those for less than, that's, even if somebody sells an empty NBA Elite 11 case on eBay, goes for about 4,000 Australian, for a case, not even displaying the game, just displaying the case on your shelf, I'm not paying that much for a case.
No. That's absolutely ridiculous. Although, I wonder what you would pay for that Arvydas Sabonis cover
of
NBA Live.
Yeah, that surfaced recently. Was that Live 2001? Cool. 2001 PC, yeah. The first international cover player. Kind of obscure, because again, we only really focused on the English version, the worldwide release of that, of 2001, with Kevin Garnett on the cover, of course. But that's somebody on Reddit posted that. They recently sourced a copy. And I've seen the Raul Lopez NBA Live 2004 cover before as well. That one's not too expensive, but certainly they've become collector's items as well and quite expensive.
Yeah, what's strange about the Arvydas Sabonis thing of him being on the cover is he actually, I'd have to look at Basketball Reference, but I'm pretty sure I remember this right. He actually missed, he retired for the 2001-02 season. If I remember correctly, and he came back and played one more year in 2002-03.
Yeah, so Live 2001 was his last year for his first run as an active player in the NBA.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And then he was out for 2001-02, and then he came back for the Blazers again and played in 2002-03.
That's right.
So it's interesting the timing.
Yeah. No, some of those international covers, and again, like the Michael Jordan with the Wizards jersey cover for the Japanese version of Live 2002. Why he wasn't the main cover player when they got him, and yet Steve Francis was. It's quite bizarre.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I love stuff like that, though. It makes collecting fun.
It does, and I do have some Friday Five articles talking about, in the pipeline, which we'll be talking about, covers like that and some cover players you may have forgotten for games that have become obscure, but also some international cover players as well. So stay tuned for that. But let's get into modding, because we were talking about it before we started recording, Derek, and you brought up the topic because obviously there's lots of people that always want to get into modding. There's somebody who's actually from the early days of NBA Live modding has just made a comeback in the forum, and they're looking to get in some 2K modding after years away from the community and the modding scene. And it's one of those things where, you know, we want to welcome everybody and make everybody feel welcome and free to throw their hat into the ring as far as getting into modding. But there are a few things you need to keep in mind.
Yeah, there's a lot to it if you want to be a creator. I think that's the thing. I think when, if you're just a user and you, I mean, that sounds terrible, like it's negative, but it's not. If you're just somebody who wants to download mods and put them in your game and use other people's works, the process is a lot easier. You know, you download a plugin, at least for the newer 2Ks I'm talking about, you download, you know, a plugin, a mods folder, a hook tool, you throw them in your main NBA 2K17 location and your mods go in the mods folder. Boom, there. You're using new scoreboards. You're using new cyberfaces, jerseys, courts, stadiums, basketballs, all of that stuff. And bam, you can get started. To be honest with you, if you're not a creator of mods and you're just using other people's mods, you can get started in like 10 minutes.
Hmm.
That's how easy it is. Like you just install it, you get, et cetera. Like I just stated, but if you want to create, and we've talked about minimalist modding before, and that is something that you can get into a little bit quicker sometimes, but if you want to be a creator, you have to use tools like, you know, Blender, Photoshop, sometimes GIMP or Paint.net if you don't have Photoshop. If you want to do roster editing, you have to use NBA 2K tools. If you want to export your own files to be able to edit them, you have to use the NBA 2K, export console, etc. So, and then obviously some different tools like Linono tools for some of the more recent prior 2Ks like 2K17 and whatnot. And then if you want to change other aspects of the game, like really get into it, you have to have, you know, you have to know your way around cheat engine, how to learn how to search text strings, know how to find things in cheat engine and troubleshoot while you're in the game. For Blender, you have to download scripts, to be able to make the models load in. Sometimes for the photo editing programs, you have to download plugins like DDS plugins, etc., which I actually have to do with Photoshop now because the most recent update kicked my DDS plugins out for some reason. So there's just a lot to it. And one of the things that I think we could do better as a community, and I think you would agree with this, is upload more tutorials. The NBA 2K21 tutorial section is incredibly bare. However, you can, if you search through YouTube, you can find things like Lost Josh, his cyberface making tutorial, some of the goods tutorials, all of that stuff. So if one thing I can preach to the community, please, if you get the time and you're already working on a process, maybe throw a tutorial together. And show people how you do that process and upload it to the tutorial section, because it will help people. Like, I think his name was the Big Salty Dog or the Salty Dog.
Mm-hmm. Is that what it was?
Yep. Who came back after, you know, he hasn't modded, I don't think, since NBA Live 98 is what he said.
20 years, yeah. Commander,
yeah. It helps those people. And then what happens if those people really get into modding and they it creates more work that people can use in the community.
It does, and that is one thing that we have been. I absolutely agree. We have to be a lot better about that. I've said this for years now. Better about sharing knowledge and resources and tutorials. I know it's time and effort to make a tutorial, and some people don't always have that skill or the time to make a video tutorial. But if you can at least do a step by step with screenshots and pretty well written instructions, that's better than nothing. Somebody else can always come along and take those instructions. I mean, even if you hand that over to somebody who can make a video tutorial, if you can write down those instructions, your process, your methods, then you're at least sharing that knowledge, and people can then take that knowledge and find better ways of sharing it. So collaborating on not just modding projects, but also sharing that knowledge is a big problem, or a big thing we need to do, and a problem that we haven't been doing it as much. And some of it, unfortunately, Derek, is that some people want to hoard that knowledge because then they're the ones that can make the best mods. And this is a problem that goes back to the heyday of NBA Live patching, modding as well. So ego in the modding community has always been an issue. And unfortunately, I think sometimes that manifests itself in not just, I mean, holding back mods, of course, and not accepting constructive criticism, but also not sharing the techniques as well. And that's something we need to get over as a community.
I've definitely seen a little bit of that. I think it's more of a lot of people want their works to shine brighter than others. And I can understand that there's sometimes an ego involved. in modding, and it is, you're an artist, right? So like I get some of it, but I think that, you know, mod should be free and open source, and we should all just be sharing and collectively sharing as a community, and that's how you get the best works. That's how you get the best out of the community, is by sharing and you know, having more people in the game, you know, creating that work. So yeah, I agree. I think that what people need to understand when they come into modding is that it takes a lot of patience.
Mm.
And you really have to want to learn. And I think that a lot of people that try to get into modding, they give up too easy. And I just encourage people to use the resources that are out there, but also ask the appropriate questions and really be okay with failing over and over and over again at the start. I think I told you about this, and I mentioned this on maybe 50 podcasts ago. I don't know. We've done a lot of shows. Mm-hmm. I mentioned how when I was first using Red MC and I was trying to import new teams, like switching teams from roster to roster, I think the game crashed for like 8 hours straight. Like I was literally just, I would spend like a half hour putting a team in, and I'd go into the game and I'd select the team and it would crash, and then it would crash again. And I kept doing it and trying different things and it would crash again. But after those 8 hours, I finally figured it out. I finally figured out what was causing the crashes and everything. And even years later, remember this was for 2K14, I remembered, you know, how to do that process. And I've recently swapped teams from roster to roster, and I even made a quick tutorial on how to do it, if you remember correctly, in the 2K14 section.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, what people need to understand is that if you really want to get into modding and you really want to help out the community and give yourself, you know, mods to enjoy and everything, you have to accept failure. You have to accept that you're going to fail, and that you have to put yourself in an uncomfortable position to start with, but it ends up being all worth it in the end. The way I look.
Trial and error is very important, and have that perseverance to mod. I've actually discovered, and I know I'm not the first person, but I hadn't seen it mentioned in our forum, so that's why I put together a written tutorial for it. But blanking out career stats in 2K10 and 11, I believe it might work for 12 as well, but certainly 10 and 11, can be done by setting up a player to have a hidden age and not being a historical player. Or was it a historical player and having a visible age? Yes, that's right. Flag them as a historical player in the database, but don't click the hide age option. Don't have the hide age option enabled in the database. And that will actually blank out the career stats, which makes it a lot easier to overwrite existing players, so you don't have to hit the created player limit if you're making a roster, say a 2021 season roster for 2K11, a game that's over 10 years old. So it's one of those techniques that I found completely by accident, and so I immediately shared it, because I thought that's a cool bit of knowledge that if anybody wants to go back and edit 2K11 as I'm doing, there's a very easy way of doing that in Red Editor 2 by just clicking a few things, and I confirmed it and looking at how it happened with the official rosters, how they, when they hid some of the players they were taking out of the visible rosters, and how they blanked out their career stats. So the trial and error is very important, and I think a lot of people, you know, some people will say in the forum, and you'll see it sometimes, you know, is this possible? And certainly I encourage people to ask questions, but I also encourage people to try. I mean, the worst you can do, if you back up your files, the worst that you can, that's going to happen is it's not going to work and you restore from the original file. So, I mean, certainly ask these questions, but instead of sitting around waiting for an answer, by all means, experiment. And that, I think that's a very important part of being a modder, is the willingness to experiment, because that's when you find out cool stuff that we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that made me think of a similar issue with NBA 2K17, where if you had a historical player and their age was locked, the way to change their age, and we found this out through trial and error, is by changing their retirement year in Limnono to you had to make it look like their retirement year was something crazy, like at times like 1975 or even further, like depending on the player and what you needed to do, into like the 2000s or something like that. And you had to mess with retirement year and birth year together in order to make their age adjustable to what you wanted to do to make it. And I had to do that with numerous players for my rosters. Another one that we had to find out through trial and error is to get how to get around retired numbers. So if you're creating a classic teams roster and you want to use the Boston Celtics, what number is not going to be available for you if you want to put in a new Larry Bird team? Number 33, right? You're not going to be able to use it because the retirement number, you're not allowed to select that number on the regular Celtics team. However, we found out a way through Limnono, through trial and error, that if you use the Limnono modifier tool to trade them to a different team where that number is available, adjust Larry Bird's number to number 33, and then use the tool to trade them back, to trade Larry Bird back to the Celtics, like not do the trade in-game, but do it through the tool, he gets to keep his number. So that's why when you pull up my NBA 2K17 UCTR roster and you go through and I have like the 91-92 Celtics in there and Larry Bird is wearing number 33, that's how I had to do it. But I could have easily just like given up and said, oh, well, we can't make Larry Bird number 33, so I can't use the Boston Celtics in 91. I can't turn them into the 91-92 Celtics. You know, I could have easily just given up, but I didn't. So it's little things like that. And like you said, it's just so important for trial and error and to not give up. I want to give an example, too, not to ramble on, is you've seen that I've been doing the 2K20, 2K21 conversions into 2K17.
Yes.
So this is something that I spent about an hour and a half converting LaMelo Ball from NBA 2K21 to 2K17. And I don't know if you noticed, but in NBA 2K21, LaMelo Ball has a ridiculously long neck. Like, it is the longest neck I've ever seen in a video game. It's unrealistic. But what ends up happening is when you do that conversion in Blender, LaMelo Ball's long neck makes it so his eye placement doesn't match up in NBA 2K17. So because the parameters are off, when you actually go into a physical 5-on-5 game, he looks fine in edit player. His eyes are like missing. Like you look at him and it's just holes with no eyeballs, no nothing. It's really creepy. And then when his eyes
because they're lower down in the model, obviously.
Yeah, because they're lower down, but they're not in Blender and they're not in edit player. It's when you get into the game. They're just like that on the court. So you would look at edit player and he would look fine. But then also, if he points his head towards a certain way, you see, like, his eyeballs coming out the sides of his head. It's, like, really creepy. So what I ended up doing, and this is the point about all of this, is that relax, be patient, and think logically and try to find a solution before you give up. I could have given up and tried to do a different LaMelo Ball, but what I did was I went into Blender, and I said, okay, if his deck is so long, I'm going to need to lower this and see if I can make it so his eyes at least are, you know, in the proper placement to go along with his head. So I selected everything above the neck. So the neck, the eyes, the hair, the mouth, all of that. And I lowered it about 2 or 3 inches and basically fixed made the shoulders match up with the neck. So they wouldn't go through the jersey. You know, I filled in the gaps, all of that stuff. And I went back into the game, and his eyes match up. He looks good not only in edit player, but when you actually go into the game, his eyes aren't, you know, there's not holes. You can actually see his eyes. He's at the line, and his eyes aren't, you know, bugging out or going through the sides of his head or anything like that. So that helps me greatly in the future when I'm doing other conversions where I have a similar issue. And for me, it was worth it because these guys in the NBA 2K17 section, 707, Simon Lee, I think the other guy's name is like Demo 10, these guys that are working on these new 2021 rosters for NBA 2K17, they need these faces, right, for those rosters. And me figuring that out just encourages me more to help them with those projects. And in turn, if they end up releasing those projects and the community loves them, there's just more people that are going to be making memories with these games. So Yeah, I guess the whole point of that entire spiel and that whole thing that I ran into is just don't give up. Like, be patient and just try to fight through it.
And of course, now you've got that tool in your belt, that tool in your toolkit to do that for future players. If you have those techniques to make other faces as well with. So having worked that issue out, you know, it is now something, a solution that you can, or at least a starting point for a solution for another player as well.
Yeah, and that's the point, is that once you, let's put it this way. So this guy who jumped into the forum and said he wants to get back into modding, and he specifically mentioned Quartz and Blacktop and whatnot. If he has the patience and he takes the time to learn either Photoshop or Paint.net, and even if he just wants to use Lagoa's one court tutorial, like the one texture court tutorial that TG So Good made a video about this, if he actually takes the time and goes through the growing pains of getting that first court in there, just getting that one first court in there successfully, it's smooth sailing from that point out. For the most part, he has the confidence now. He can now move on to court number two. He can release those mods with confidence and everything. So it's honestly, a lot of it is just getting through those initial stages of learning the technology, learning the program and how it works. Like, think about when you start a job. That's the way I look at it. Like, when you start a job, it's always like stressful starting a job, right? Because you don't know anything. You're the guy that comes in and you don't know anything. They put you in this room a lot of times and you're watching all of these training videos, or you're constantly sitting with people depending at your job, what job you're doing and everything. But think about how you feel a month later, 2 months later.
Absolutely. I've been there. Yeah, I think a lot of us have with jobs. And one of the things I do stress with modding is that you're not going to be an expert right away. You are going to have to, as you say, fail to make anything. It's all about learning how something works, how to actually change something before you actually go for quality. Go for competence before quality. Certainly you want to make the best mod you can, but if you're focusing on being that and having that perfect face straight away, you are probably going to give up a lot sooner. And something else that I do mention is that while I do want modding to be open to everyone, it's like basketball gaming in general. You don't want it to be a case of gatekeeping. But with that being said, and you alluded to this at the top of the segment, is that it is more intense to make a mod than to use a mod, obviously. There is no, as some people ask, can we download some modding software where we can just basically click buttons and spit out a face or a jersey? Look, if that program existed, 2K would be making great faces straight away. They wouldn't need to hire Razer and other people to sculpt faces if they could just click buttons. You know, any idiot could do that then. Unfortunately, it would be very nice if we had that kind of modding software, but we don't. So you do need to have some, obviously, patience and perseverance, but you also need some competence with computers as well, with basic IT computer skills, because there's some people. You say, okay, you need to go to your game folder. Whoa, whoa, whoa. How do you locate a folder on your hard drive? If finding a folder on your hard drive is a very difficult task for you, you do need to brush up on some computer skills, some basic skills before you get into modding. And that sounds harsh, but at the same time, if you don't have that competence with a computer, you're not going to... We are hacking the game, basically. We're taking files, we're opening them up, we're manipulating textures, we're importing, exporting and everything. It's a straightforward process once you know what you're doing, but if you don't really know much more of computers than simply installing a game and playing it, and even that's a little bit complicated at times, you definitely need to brush up on some skills before you get into modding. And it sounds harsh, but it's just something you have to do.
Well, that actually makes me want to talk about a couple other points. And you and I talk about minimalist modding, but let's talk about simple mods. Like, if you want to contribute to the community and you want to say, you know what, I want to be a bigger part of NLSC and maybe I can help out with projects, you don't have to do anything super complicated. You don't have to be a cyber face maker. I mean, you may want to be, but maybe that's beyond your grasp and you don't have the patience for it. Maybe you don't even want to be a court creator. Make a portrait. Make an updated portrait for a player. You know, do basic photo editing. Make a portrait. Maybe just make small face portraits.
Signature shot edits.
That's what they utilize.
Signature shot edits. You know.
that's a great point. You know, even something that doesn't involve an art program, jump on the forum and make a thread that says, hey, here are the signature shot edits. Here's a better one for Dirk Nowitzki. Here's a better one for these players. You know, do you have any idea how many of the retro teams have messed up signatures that are not even close to the way they shoot in real life? Go shoot a shot with Clyde Drexler, Dominique Wilkins, Ricky Pierce, and, you know, all of these players from the classic teams and the all-time teams, those teams are in sore need of signature shot edits. That is a form of modding.
Absolutely,
and you can share that in the forum.
I mean, rosters, that's why I did rosters for years, because I wasn't really confident with the art manipulation. I've gotten into it a little bit with NBA Live over the years, but rosters have always been my bread and butter, because you can do a lot of stuff in the game, editing players. If you have external tools, it's a bit tougher with the recent games. As you say, you need to get Cheat Engine and other tools to externally manipulate the rosters and edit things you can't access in-game. It's a little bit easier on 2K10 to 2K14, because Red Editor 2 and Red MC are completely free and fully functional these days. So if you want to get into editing those old games, and there's still quite a lot of people who like those games and play them and want to see mods for them, especially 13 and 14, and even 12 to a certain extent, and there's a dedicated community for 11 as well, 10, you know, it's getting a little bit out of date. But certainly 13, 14, there are still a lot of people interested in those games, and those tools are very readily available. And rosters are very easy to edit on those games compared to recent ones. But rosters, there's so much that can be done in games. Edit the signatures, as you said. Edit the badges. Edit ratings. You can do a lot of fixed rosters that you can just do everything in game and then share it through 2K Share, through the roster editing sharing, in game sharing. So there's a lot that you can do for the community without actually, that's less technically taxing, but nevertheless can create a great project. And you can even create some other, you know, fairly comprehensive minimalist mods in, I know that's kind of an oxymoron there, you know, comprehensive minimalist mods, but you can do something of significance. You could make an NBA Jam style roster where you mix in historical players with current players all in game and just edit their ratings so that everyone, you know, Steve Nash can do 360 dunks and everything and make this Jam or Street style of mod that, even without a lot of external manipulation or extra art files, would still be very fun to play with. You know, it's worth doing.
I've actually been waiting to see if somebody would make a mod like that where they adjust, because we can adjust animations in past games like NBA 2K14. Like, we figured out how to do that. I've been waiting to see if somebody would create a mod for like NBA 2K21 or something where players, they adjust the in-game mechanics where if you have a certain vertical, you literally can jump really high. Like where your waist is at the rim or something like that. Like, that would be interesting. But I wanted to bring this up. You know, you were talking about that. Like, you know, even this is a mod, people, in my opinion. This is a roster mod. You know, even all-time teams with no duplicates. That's a roster mod that you could release on the forum and that people would play. You know, if we go back to art, if you want to talk about minimalist modding, something that you could do that's really quick that people love, you know, create a basketball mod. Mod a basketball. And you will get people to download it, and people will appreciate it. There was a thread on NBA 2K21, I want to say, where somebody just released a few ball mods, and people absolutely loved them, and people were using them. And you can do a lot of things with that. Somebody created a ball that looked like it was like a fireball, and I can't remember which 2K that was. It was one of the recent ones, and people loved it, and they used it. So, yeah, those are like minimalist art mods that could get your feet wet too, learning the basics of certain like photo editing programs and how the mods open and how they need to be imported and stuff like that. But yeah,
I'm trying to remember that the fireball mod was that one because the fireball was added as a collectible ball in my team. So I think somebody found the texture and reused it, and they were trying to, I think it might have been Thunder Shack actually, was trying to find if they could actually have the fire effects, because it trails like an on-fire NBA Jam style ball that they did, and for my team, they found that it's the glowing on-fire ball without all the extra effects, unfortunately, but that was done by just switching around some of the files that are already in the game. I remember making an ABA ball for Live 2005 to 08, I think it was, basically by taking the red, white, and blue ball texture from the three-point shootout and replacing that with replacing the default ball texture. And you could then use the ABA ball as you know, it was the same kind of ball texture and model, so you could just switch it around.
My brother and I use the ABA ball for our Legends co-op Legends season on NBA 2K17.
Yeah.
We use an ABA ball. We have to do the same thing for NBA 2K21 as well. But
so,
yeah,
manipulating what's there, making use of what's there, yeah.
Right, exactly. You can make use of what's there and slightly edit it if you want and everything. But again, I just want to preach the whole thing that some of the best, you know, creators and whatnot had, you know, they put themselves in incredibly uncomfortable situations at the start and tons of failure in order to get where they are today. So I think a lot of it comes down to patience and being willing to fail and really learn the programs. And I just wish, I do wish that more people did that, that they took the time to do it.
Absolutely. And look, you know, we need to build up those resources. We need to get those collections preserved in the download section as well, as much as possible. So we encourage our modding community to really be not insular and to be welcoming. And one thing I will put out there as well is that when you are asking questions, some people do come into the forum and say, and with a whole laundry list of questions, 20, 25 questions. And I don't want to dissuade anyone from asking questions, don't get me wrong. But I think it's important with modding is to pick a starting point as well. Pick a mod that you want to, a certain type of mod to start with. And or maybe ask, what's the kind of the easiest mod? And then start with there. Or start with something that you're most interested in making. Because when you come with a big, long post, it can be very overwhelming for people to answer. Then the topic goes off in all different directions. It's hard to keep track of the conversation. Sometimes it's better to start a couple of different threads or just start out with a couple of basic questions and then let people expand upon it. That's my other advice, is to not overwhelm people with questions, because then unfortunately people sometimes aren't as responsive, because it's again overwhelming to see this big laundry list of questions, all of them which could be a topic, you know, unto themselves. So it's one of those things that the energy that you put into a community is very important. And I'm not saying to walk on eggshells or anything like that. You know, we don't want to be that kind of community. But certainly if you do overwhelm people with that big laundry list of questions with your first post, sometimes it can be too overwhelming for people to jump in with answers, because it's hard to know where to start. Yeah.
There's a big difference between I want to learn modding and I want to learn modding courts. Like,
yes.
There's a huge difference between the two.
Specific,
because modding,
yeah.
It's such a blanket statement. There's so many different. I want to make a point on this too, and so you understand, not you, but you know, listeners and whatnot too, who may not be that privy with modding. So we have the NBA 2K19 retro roster project, and we're all in a Discord. There's like clearly defined roles in this project. Not everybody's just making mods. Like, I don't make courts for the project. Sticky Fingers makes courts. I think one other person may also be attacking courts. Peaceman Knot is unbelievable with jerseys and stadiums, so he works on that. We have Culture, Lady Culture, who's been doing like ratings tendencies. She's been doing a great job with that for the specific rosters. We have Stildo, or Stildo, however you want to say it, who kind of plays like the Hawk and Sko role of, you know, putting everything together, doing some light cheat engine stuff, all of that stuff, and putting the roster together. We have Mikoshetti, I think that's how you pronounce it. He does shoes and whatnot. Like, we all have our, like, and Calvin Chan does cyberfaces, and I do cyberface conversions and dabble in cyberfaces as well. Like, we all have mostly clearly defined roles, and we do our own things for the project. That's the point. If you want to get into modding and you want to start contributing and you want to start releasing works and everything, have a target of what you want to get started with. If what interests you is making new courts or making classic courts or courts in general, tackle that first and learn like how to make courts and ask that as the question, like, how do I make courts?
And yeah, when there are big projects, you know, like that, obviously coordination is important. Different roles are important, even within the community. I mean, when you're trying to learn how to mod, make whatever you can to learn the basics. Start with your favorite player if you wish, whatever helps you to develop the techniques. An issue that we've run into over the years is that we sometimes, maybe not so much in recent years, but back in the day a lot, we would have where people made six or seven Kobe Bryant faces, and they were all pretty good, but people were still making them and not necessarily making it better or differently than the other five or six that were already pretty good. And then meanwhile, you had these other players that really needed a face update, or players that had been added to the game in rosters that didn't have an original face. So also take a look around at what, I think a great way to contribute to the community is to look at what isn't being done, and then fill that niche, and or fill that as far as, not necessarily niche, but certainly if certain players aren't being made, like missing players, or a lot of deep bench players that have got really kind of generic faces. If you get really good at faces, enhancing them so that everybody in the game has these great faces. Obviously, a lot of these stars have pretty good ones to begin with, or historical players, or missing historical players. These are the kinds of things you can focus on and make your thing if nobody else is doing them. Obviously it comes down to your interest, but still.
Yeah, I think I have a great example of that, actually, and I think it was with 2K18, and I think he extended that to do it on a couple other games. I can't remember exactly, but I think it was Gideon Prime who did the body edits. He had an entire
thread
of body edits and also shrinking those big heads, the oversized heads.
I remember, yeah.
That were in 2K18. That was a niche. Nobody else was really doing that, and he got a ton of comments and support on that thread. And what else did that do for him? Is that probably helped him a little bit, if he didn't already know, work his way around Blender. It helped him understand Blender a little bit more, the tools that to edit those bodies and to shrink those heads, and how to work with proportions and what the game will accept and what it will reject, and what will look good in the game and all of that stuff. So that's a good example of somebody saying, hey, you know what? Nobody else is really doing this. This is something that needs to be done. And boom, there it is. It's the same example, like you said. Instead of creating the sixth Kobe or the seventh Kobe or the sixth LeBron or seventh LeBron, maybe you dabble in editing or creating a player that nobody else is really looking at, that nobody else is really playing. And maybe that gets people to notice your work more as well. It's like, hey, nobody's tackled this guy and you did.
Exactly,
nobody's tackled this court and you did. Thank you for tackling this. So, there's just so many different things. And, we talk about how many different mods there are out there and what we can do. The opportunities are really endless. It's unbelievable the stuff that we can do.
It is. And the other thing that I'd end on as far as my final bit of advice for modding is mod for the right reasons. Mod because you enjoy it. Don't mod to make it a career, although certainly if you make great mods, you can get noticed by developers and become an artist for companies. So, I mean, that is a possible perk of it. But to that end, we don't allow charging for mods for many reasons. I recently wrote an article about that, about the feeling that you deserve to get paid for your work. I mean, we all stand on the shoulders of giants as far and benefit from free tools and free resources and free platforms and hope for hosting and promoting work, whether it's the NLSC. Even if you're using Discord or a Facebook group, you are using something for free and also thinking that you should profit from it completely. I understand wanting to feel compensated for your work, but our modding community was built on creating these great mods for each other, for the love of the game, the love of modding, not walking the line as far as legal issues are concerned, because all it takes to shut down the modding community is a C&D, which will definitely come a lot quicker if we're doing things that are like profiting off intellectual property that we don't own, people. So that's one of the main reasons we don't do it. But it's just not the dumb thing. Yeah.
I use this as an example, and I hope this... I hope people understand this. And this is the way I look at it. If I have a CD, okay, and I edit the CD, like, let's say I edit part of a song and put, like, my own voice in it or put, like, something in it that's not part of the original song, and I just say, hey, Andrew, you're my friend. Here, have this CD, and I just give it to you for free, right? And I don't profit off of it. There's nothing wrong with that. I can do that. I can just give you that CD. I don't profit off of it. We're not mass distributing it or anything like that. But if I edit that CD, that official work, and like I put my own voice in it, or I like I say, I edit the lyrics, I edit something about it, and I mass distribute it and put it out there publicly, and I sell it and I profit off of it, there's a huge difference between those two things. And the first thing of me giving you that CD for free and not profiting off of it and just saying, hey, here it is, enjoy this, I can't get in trouble for that. But for that sell, for mass distributing and putting that out there and selling it when it's not my intellectual property and making like a profit off of it, that is illegal.
Exactly.
And that's the way I look at it. I think that's the simplest way that I can put it.
No, that's a great analogy. But yes, we certainly encourage everybody to get involved with modding and make use of our resources. And again, we do want to build up those resources for each other and future generations of modders. So definitely get involved and make use of our facilities. But with that being said, we have come to our favorite part of the show, I think it's fair to say. We certainly love doing it every week, Derek. It is the mailbag.
Yeah, we definitely had some questions come in, a couple of late questions as well. So again, thank you for not only listening to the show, but also participating. Appreciate it.
So the first question/topic we're going to get to this week, and we've already alluded to this game earlier in the show, is NBA Live 2001. This comes from Nate Stasho on Twitter. Why does NBA Live 2001 continue to be the black sheep of your podcast? Mentions us talking about it on the 25th anniversary special, of course, which we also mentioned at the top of the show. And he's actually a big fan of 2001. He and a friend both play it on PS2 and of course, share their highlights on I believe, YouTube and certainly Instagram as well. Yes, I mean, I guess Live 2001 isn't... it's not the black sheep of our podcast. I guess that's a bit tongue-in-cheek of of you putting it that way. I mean, there's a lot of games we don't necessarily talk about unless we have something relevant to say about them. And certainly with retro games, it depends whether it's in our rotation recently or whether something's come to our mind. But, I mean, look, we both go way back with NBA Live, so... Hey, we can definitely talk about Live 2001 a bit. I'm sure we have some stories and so forth. In fact, I can talk about why it's not been in my rotation as much as some other games of its vintage. But obviously, we've had that Live 2001 cover come out with Avita Sabonis. Again, that's something that flew under the radar, Derek.
Okay, so one thing I want to say is I appreciate his love for NBA Live 2001. I do. And I appreciate those who, you know, still play those games, actually.
Sure.
I think you can agree.
Absolutely.
Because there's definitely some replayability with them. But I do want to say that's definitely not the black sheep of the podcast. I mean, we have 30 plus years of basketball gaming to cover, and we do touch on it every now and then. We just don't go really super in depth on it. And I think that one of the reasons is...
2K, sorry to interrupt, 2K18, now that's the black sheep of our podcast.
Yeah, I mean, if you want, yeah, there's a little bit more negative with 2K18. yeah, exactly. If you want to use a game, it's 2K18 and Live 07.
Be fresh.
But, yeah, I think a couple things about NBA Live 2001. One, it has one of the most memorable intros in basketball video game history. You know, the Montel Jordan Unstoppable song. And you have, you know, the gameplay, you know, flashing throughout the screen during the intro. And then you have KG with the... motion capture, like he has the motion capture suit on and he's doing moves, and you obviously have Montel Jordan, you know, on the screen singing and all of that stuff. Like, it's definitely a memorable beginning. It's a great song in basketball video games. I like the lore of the menus in NBA Live 2001, the brightness of the presentation. I like the presentation on the court as well. One thing that people don't appreciate enough about a game like NBA Live 2001, both on PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2, is the cutscenes at the free throw line, where they go close in on the player, or they show the player, you know, slapping hands after the first free throw and whatnot with the people at the line. I think that that's underrated, and we see that in the newer games. Just to let you guys know that that's been in games for, you know, 20 plus years.
Yeah.
So I think that's a cool aspect. Another thing that NBA Live 2001 does well, and I think you can agree with this, and I think that's something that I really wish was in the newer 2Ks, but for some reason they don't do this anymore, is the stats that consistently show up when you go to the line. Like, they have the pop-ups that show the, like, how they're doing so far in the game and whatnot.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like real TV presentation, et cetera. And they don't do those pop-ups really anymore.
You know, I haven't noticed that, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, that was a big staple of those early games, and that part of that replicating that TV presentation. And yeah, they have shied away from that. Interesting.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that, and that's something that I definitely remember from Live 2001. I think that Live 2001 doesn't stand out as much to me. And I don't talk about it as much as Live 2000 because Live 2000, in my opinion, was overall a better game. I had NBA Live 2000 for the PC, and I modded it a little bit, and I just really enjoyed the gameplay, the presentation as much or more than NBA Live 2001. I just think it was a stronger overall title, especially the PC version, not as much like the N64 version, but the PC version. So I think that that's why NBA Live 2001 gets a little bit lost in my mind. I will say this, though, and I think Nate will appreciate this. I don't think this gets brought up enough. I think the net and the net physics in NBA Live 2001 are some of the best for the PS2. Are some of the best in video game history. That net is fantastic. And when the ball goes through, it just feels absolutely awesome. And the way the texture looks for the net looks really cool. And obviously that's only in the PS2 version, not the PS1 version. It's definitely an underrated aspect of that game. I know that sounds silly, but there's something to be said about how the ball, how it feels when you hit a shot. And I've talked about this actually on a previous podcast where they basically removed, ever since NBA 2K19, they've like removed that sweet swish feel, right? Like you don't have like the nice loose net, the feeling of like the good feel of a swish and whatnot, the good feeling of making a shot. And that NBA Live 2001 is definitely better in that regard. And now we've had a couple net mods that were made over the course of time by like, Mau Mau in the forum where he added the swish element, and it definitely helps. It's another one of those mods that you wouldn't think of doing on your own probably, but then when the community comes out with it, you're like, holy crap, this is amazing. But yeah, I think you can appreciate the net in Live 2001 for PS2.
So I've played it much more on PC than PS2 or PS1, although I do own the PS2 and PS1 version. I mean, the net, it's one of those things that I've thought about writing an article about it, because, and I think we have covered it before on the podcast as well. As you say, the satisfying swish, you know, that is one of the most satisfying things in basketball, when you swish a shot, obviously. And when it's really represented well visually, from an audio, you know, audibly as well, in a game, you get that same kind of satisfaction. So it you know, I definitely get where you're coming from with that, and I actually think it's got some very good basket movement too. When you hit the rim with a dunk, the way that the basket sways in Live 2001 is subtle, but it's also very nice. The only problem is that there's no dunks that actually bend the rim down, which was a bit of a problem. 2001, they actually went to a new engine. They rewrote the code from scratch basically with 2001, which is why it feels very different to 2000. And I do actually agree that 2000 is better, and it's one of the reasons 2001 isn't in my rotation as much. Neither is 2000 for a while, actually, but simply because I've been playing other things. But with that being said, I do prefer 2000 to 2001. It was kind of a controversial release when it came out for many reasons. Again, the rebuilding the game from scratch with going to a new code, a new engine. There was some teething problems there for sure. When you spin, trying to string together a spin move into a shot is a little bit awkward. There's a bit of a delay. It was the same with 2002 as well. They hadn't really figured it out yet. So there's issues with offensive rebounding. Too many offensive boards compared to defensive boards. Again, I mentioned tweak rosters earlier in tweak ratings earlier in the show. That is something we tried for 2001 on PC. To a placebo effect, I believe. But it was still very solid for the time, especially, you know, having spoken to Rod Redekop. That was his final game that he worked on. Rod was one of the big names in the early NBA Live games in the series, and he mentioned that they had was this on the podcast? Because I know that he invited me into a group with some of the developers from the old days, and they were telling me some stories, and I believe it might have been there in a Facebook chat, actually, that he invited me into. But 2001 was a much smaller team, which was the reason the PC version was delayed until early 2001, I think February from memory that year, because they had a much smaller team trying to get that port done and everything. and that's why a PC patch was promised that year and never eventuated, because they didn't have the resource to do it, and that's why Live 2002 was a console-only release, because they had such a small team as they were trying to rebuild. A few people left after 2001, so yeah, there's a lot of inside stories that that haven't really been told about that history of NBA Live. Again, it's not my favorite, but I do appreciate what it is. I did play it quite a lot back in the day, mostly the PC version. The other thing is why it's not in my rotation as much is that I do have it working on Windows 7, actually, and it works, but for some reason it doesn't detect my controller properly, and it thinks my keyboard is a second controller but won't work with it, so I can't actually really control it on my computer, unfortunately. So I'm trying to troubleshoot.
Playing games on the keyboard is a nightmare. I just want to point that out. I can't stand playing basketball.
It is, but I would do it if I could, but for some reason, it's not detecting my my peripherals properly. I do need to go through and troubleshoot it at some point. I know I can play on PS2, but I'm very partial to the PC version, which, of course, I can mod and do things with that. So when I want to get screenshots, Derek, for 2001, at the moment, I basically have to do CPU versus CPU and wait for the CPU to do something cool and then take a screenshot of it. Normally, I would set up a screenshot to do. It can take a while for the CPU. The problem with the games around that time is there's a lot of the CPU, especially when it's CPU versus CPU, is just standing around letting the shot clock run down without really running a play. The AI was very primitive at that point, so we see a lot of that. But that's one of the main reasons that 2001 isn't in my in my rotation as much at the moment. I do need to troubleshoot that, because I at least like to be able to take proper screenshots without having to wait around for the CPU to do something that I wanted to do. Would be nice.
Yeah, I'd say Live 2000 actually had a better AI overall than NBA Live 2001, and maybe it's because 2001 was in primitive state. But I think when the AI really picked up as far as like decision making and acting faster was Live 2003.
And then they brought in 10-man freestyle in 2004, and it was even better, you know, as far as off-ball movement, etc. Yeah, but that is a staple of the early basketball games, is that you notice the CPU's AI is not very smart, not very active in the sim games sometimes. What else could I say about 2001? There was something I was thinking of when we got that question. The interesting thing about 2001's creative player is that that year you couldn't enter weight. You had to balance. Do you remember you had to balance the sliders to between the body proportions to actually get the weight number? That was interesting.
Yeah. It's a different way of looking at it, but it still can make your player look right.
Sometimes.
On the court.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes, right. I did want to bring up one thing, too, really quick, not to interrupt you, about Live 2001. He brought up Pat Garrity, about the dominance of Pat Garrity.
The legendary Pat Garrity, yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about video game legends in the past. A couple other ones from, you know, past titles were like Keith Van Horn for the same reason, and Rashard Lewis. There was, and Walter McCarty. I brought up Walter McCarty as well. He's a video game legend from the early 2000s games. These tall guys that you could just walk up, like fire it down the floor, and just jack threes with, and if they had a high enough three-point rating, you couldn't block them, really. And it was just blue sky all day, and those guys would just rain threes. It made legends out of some of those guys. And one thing that video games have had trouble doing, going all the way back to even like Live 98, Live 99, 2000, 2001, one thing that games have had trouble factoring in is height, like how to make height work. And if people think that ended in the early 2000s, you're mistaken in a big way, because – like I had mentioned in a response to Nate after he mentioned the Garrity thing, you could put up Wilt Chamberlain numbers with Hashim to beat in those late 2000s NBA 2Ks. I mean, the man was ridiculously dominant, because he's around 7'3 or 7'4, and around the rim, he would just gobble up every rebound, and you could just go right back up with him. And yeah, good luck stopping any of his half hooks or anything that he's doing like on the block. And it's because the game didn't factor in height. My brother Mark, who doesn't really care much as much about realism, it's really just all about having as much fun as possible and trying to win, and I love the way he plays sometimes, was absolutely ridiculously dominant with Larry Sanders and Greg Monroe. Like, you would think that it was Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell as opposed to Greg Monroe and Larry Sanders, and he just pummeled my brother to death, my other brother, in games whenever he used that combination, when he used those two together. the games just over time, whether it be Live or 2K, have had trouble factoring in height. And it's not surprising that Pat Garrity was dominant, like he had stated, because we distinctly remember like 100-point games by Keith Van Horn. Then is the same for the same reason.
I do have a theory to share. I have mentioned this in an article before, but I've mentioned in Live 2000 PC, when you go into the credits, you see Kevin Garnett dancing. And Kevin Garnett was also featured in the intro of Live 2000, but the cover player of Live 2000 was Tim Duncan.
Of course,
with Michael Jordan as the insert, with Jordan's back on the cover as well. My theory is that KG, you know, I should have, I might need to reach out to Rod about this and just confirm one way or the other. I have a theory that KG was originally supposed to be the cover player or the face of Live 2000, because he's very heavily featured in that. And, you know, he's, again, Easter egg of him dancing around in the credits screen. And again, he's there very heavily featured in the intro, but Tim Duncan on the cover. And then, of course, he was the cover player of 2001. I do have a theory that he was supposed to be the Live 2000 cover player. Somehow that fell through, and then he became the 2001 cover player. Maybe an odd conspiracy? I don't know. I'm not much of a conspiracy, just one of those weird things.
I've always thought about that, because of the intro where he's on the street court and he's driving towards the hoop. Yeah, I've always thought that Kevin Garnett was supposed to be the cover athlete, and something fell through.
It just seems to make sense that he's featured that much, and yet Tim Duncan is the cover player.
I mean, Tim Duncan's a fitting choice at that point.
Of course, yeah, coming up first championship, yeah.
But it makes you wonder if there was communication where it was like, okay, well, we've decided that we want to make Kevin Garnett the cover athlete for next year. Hey, Tim, do you want to be the cover athlete this year? Yeah, I've always thought that. Another great intro, by the way.
2000?
Live 2000 also had a great intro.
Yeah. I miss those intros. We haven't had one since 2K17.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to bring something else up to wrap up the Live 2001 talk. I think you can agree. One thing that with Live 2001 is they didn't really expand on the control or the controls over NBA Live 2000. I didn't feel like I was really getting much of a new experience overall, and I still felt mostly limited as far as what I could do offensively. So I did want to point that out, too, if he's talking about, you know, he enjoys it, and I could still jump into NBA Live 2001 and enjoy aspects of it.
Agreed,
like I could still probably get in there. And maybe you and I can connect to and play a game or something like that on it. I wouldn't be opposed to that. But I don't think that there was a jump that made me super excited about Live 2001 over Live 2000. I think that's one of the reasons why I don't talk about it as much.
There's a bit of roughness to it. I do remember being a mixed reception in the community, and certainly when some of the issues weren't fixed by the patch because that fell through. It's a controversial release, but then it became a game that we talked about modding on this show. Obviously, it was a game that we kept updated for a year because a lot of people in our community were on PC, so they weren't playing Live 2002, which was a console only release, and then returned with Live 2003 on PC, of course. So, and I agree. I think there was more. There was only really in 2002 they added the alley-oop button, and I believe the call for pick button as well. Is pretty much all they added in 2002. It wasn't until we had that the literal freestyle revolution in 2003 that we really had that big jump. And it's but 2001, you know what? I certainly respect playing that. I mean, I love playing, going back and playing the classics. It's not one of my first choices, I will admit. At the moment, my preferred version of PC, as I say, I do need to troubleshoot why it's not picking up my peripherals properly. It's got to be something, any file somewhere that I can mess around with, I'm sure. But yeah, no, I mean, more power to you for putting out the content for the 2001. Like, I do love that. You know, it's one of those things where, when we talked about it last week, you know, who would go back and play this? I mean, I might pick other games ahead of 2001, but I'm never going to say to somebody, don't play, you know, an old favorite like that, because they do endure over the years.
And it does have good elements.
It does.
It's not a terrible game. It's not like you're not going to talk about that as one of the worst games in the series. It's not a bad game. And maybe I'll get around to making a gameplay video of it on YouTube. I'm sure that could make some other people happy. I feel like my retro gameplay videos get more shine on YouTube. I think that people kind of gravitate to that content.
Like nostalgia, yeah, absolutely. Unless you're making build videos or something that they can really... unless you've got that audience that's after that, you know, the OP build for my career or how to hack my team or whatever, people aren't necessarily interested in just straight up gameplay. I don't think anyway as much, but you get that nostalgic crowd. You know, we talked actually one last note about 2001. It has some of my favorite basic dunks in the series, and something that Live has done, or not done over the years rather, is represent a wide variety of dunks from the basic to the spectacular. Even as of Live 19, pretty much every dunk in the game is a big dunk, which is exciting in its own way. But I do like how 2K has got some of those basic dunks around the rim. You know, not everything is a flashy dunk. And sometimes that, you know, you just want that quick flush, not a you know, 360 that's going to get blocked from behind. 2001 had some really great basic dunks. As I say, the rim could have bent a little bit more, or at all for that matter, but I loved the way the backboard swayed on dunks. Loved the net animation. I loved some of those basic dunks. So I do like 2001 highlights. I do think they're cool.
I think the dunks look good. I thought the dunks looked good in Live 2000 too. Yeah, I think drives to the hoop can look pretty darn good in that game. In fact, all of this talk about it is kind of making me want to jump on it. So you actually might see me upload a video.
You got us, Nate. You got us playing 2001. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it got me thinking. You know, one of the things that I really enjoy, and I've talked about this on previous episodes, one of the things I really enjoy about going back and playing these games is seeing what they were doing design-wise. Like how different it was from the previous version, or the version that came after it. What they were, trying to focus on, you know, simple things like the net physics and, like you said, the basket rocking after a dunk, all of that stuff. Like, I think it might be good for me to revisit it again, and just take a closer look, and maybe I'll put a game together, and maybe I'll get some gameplay up. Maybe that would be fun.
There you go. So our second question this week comes from KidCash202 on Twitter. So I know Deepa384, that is Derek, of course, plays with his brother. Do you miss the majority of human versus human battles taking place in person versus online? I think many of us old heads lost some passion for basketball video games once the majority of the contests started taking place online. I think we both have some very strong feelings about this, but I'll throw it to you first because, you brought up your brothers. Obviously, that is something that you still do, play basketball games together. And I, of course, play with my cousin, but I know you're a very big supporter of human versus human and not so much of the online multiplayer.
Nothing beats it. Nothing, absolutely nothing beats that type of multiplayer experience or that type of experience in gaming in general. Nothing beats being together. Nothing beats laughing together. Nothing beats being able to see each other's reactions. You communicate different when you're playing these games in person. You create far more memories. You can see, you know, online, you can't see somebody throw their head back when something happens, or like, you know, slam their fist or something like that, even if it's in a joking way or anything like that. You can't see the smiles on people's faces while they're playing. It goes a lot deeper than just playing a game against each other. It's not, oh, well, you can still play against them online. It's missing all of those human aspects that really make a complete an experience whole. So, you know, we still have our video game weekends. One of my brothers lives with me, and we still play video games constantly together in the same room. It is absolutely, like he said, it's just not the same experience when you play online. And my brother and I have done that, actually. Recently, my brother Mark was unable to come over for a while, but he really wanted to play the NBA 2K17 season with me and my brother Nick. And we're all playing a season on the same team. I shared the stats on that. We're in the playoffs right now. We actually have the finals that we're playing tomorrow. We're in the finals. But we played three games while Mark was at home and Nick and I were here. And so we had Mark on speakerphone on the phone while he played with us. We used the Steam play together.
Yes.
And it just wasn't the same. I mean, Nick and I were in the same room, but having Mark not in the room with us and just hearing his voice and not seeing his reactions to stuff and everything, it wasn't the same. Like, we didn't enjoy it as much, and we haven't done it since, actually. So, yeah, it just makes a big difference. It's more competitive when you're doing it in person. You know, if you're playing on the same team, it's more collaborative. In my opinion, it's the best way to game.
So I've talked about playing with my cousin before, obviously, my cousin Clinton, and we would always play co-op for the most part when it comes to basketball games. So I don't have as many memories of human versus human in basketball games. against some of my friends in NBA Hangtime back in the day, in NBA Jam Tournament Edition. I do have memories there, but again, when it comes to Clint, it's mostly him and I playing co-op. But I do think of, you know, even hanging out with friends now, we go going around for a barbecue or whatever, going around for dinner, you know, drinks before town, you know, when we're a bit younger, you know, all getting in our 30s now, and not as partying as much as partying as hardy. But, you know, getting, so someone always, someone has a console or something, playing, if not a basketball game, most likely with them, with that group of friends, it is, I don't know, Mortal Kombat or Injustice or Tekken, a fighting game of some kind of going against each other. And again, the laughing, as you say, the reactions, the good-natured trash talking and everything. That local multiplayer is very special, and you don't get a lot of the toxicity that you get online. That being said, I mean, I have played online a fair bit in recent years, obviously. It's something I've talked about a lot. We used to recap it a lot with Kenny and Ben Arcane when we did our week in basketball gaming. But we did play 2K Pro-Am and The Wreck, and it's something that I've you know, dived into here and there, and I wrote an article about playing that recently. But you do lose that camaraderie. You do lose that good-natured competition. And look, it's good for what it is. You know, I think there is a lot of value in the online team play concept. It's pretty cool to have 10 people in 10 different locations coming together when it works. And of course, you've got lag and things like that. And that's the other thing you don't have in local multiplayer, is those kinds of technical issues and server dropouts and everything else. It can be very cool to play that and play different people and have these different opponents and changing up the game that way. But you also deal with a lot of muck. You deal with a lot of toxicity, a lot of technical issues here and there, even if it's just lag spikes every now and again. Seems to happen a lot. And again, of course, I'm in Australia, so that is a factor, but it is what it is. And certainly it's also affected the design of the games, because as the focus has shifted to online play, you don't have that same catering to the human versus human experience. You don't have the same focus on fixing things up for the human versus CPU experience. So certainly the focus on online play, we've talked about this before, while it's very important, I think they need to do it, it's always to the point where you wonder, and of course recurrent revenue mechanics, you know, can't not mention that problem. It's almost to the point where you feel it'd be best if they had two separate games, kind of 2K online and a 2K, you know, 2K for sim heads. How that would work with splitting the user base, I'm not sure. Being able to have those connected experiences and not have to grind multiple players, you know, there's reasons they do it the way they do it, but I do agree that experience, the human versus human, is very special. You do lose some of that sportsmanship as well online, and that is the big thing playing online. I turn my messages off on PlayStation Network because, look, it doesn't upset me. I'm not so sensitive that if somebody sends me a nasty message, I'm sobbing in the fetal position for days. But do I really want a kid sending me profane messages full of horrible bigoted slurs because they won a game against me online? They beat me online? No. I realize that I don't really care to hear from people you know, on PlayStation Network that I don't know. So while it's been really fun to play with the guys, obviously, from the NLSC squad, and have that camaraderie with them and catch up, and, you know, that's, you know, when I have a night in to be able to get on there and we talk basketball or, you know, crack jokes and things like that. It's nice. It's an okay replacement if you aren't local with each other, if you are spread out, and it is a way to catch up with people, obviously, if you can't meet up in person. But that being said, playing on a couch or a couple of computer chairs, whatever, playing with somebody else in the same room is so much better for so many more reasons. And the focus on online players we've talked about before has been detrimental, unfortunately, to that human versus human experience, but also the game in general, quite sadly.
Yeah, it's not just affected basketball video games or sports video games either. It's a lot of different video games out there where they make it online co-op only, as opposed to local co-op.
Yeah.
So if you don't have like a two monitor or two TV, two computer setup, etc., you can't play in the same room. You can't play those games together.
Look at GTA. So, I mean, because it's all about GTA Online, we've had GTA 5 for three generations now. Back in the day, we'd have multiple GTA games per generation. But now we've found a way to just recycle the same game for three generations running.
Yeah, they're pushing people to online, and that's where it's going. And unfortunately, like you said, it has hurt the local co-op and local against modes and encouragement and all of that stuff. And I want to point something out too. You and I played a game. We played NBA 2K21 online against each other, and it wasn't that great of an experience, mostly because of the gameplay. But it was missing, in my opinion, the chemistry element. We're playing against each other, but it's missing that in-person element that I was just discussing earlier. It wasn't that exciting for me to just sit here, in my living room, and you and I didn't have headsets on either, so we're not talking to each other.
I was gonna say, I don't think we were mic'd up for that game, were we? We weren't
No,
mic'd
we
up,
weren't.
no.
And
Yeah.
so it felt like I was playing, I'm playing another human, but it's like I'm playing against a computer,
Exactly, yeah.
right?
Might as well have been, yeah.
And right, exactly. And like you said, even if you have your mic on and you are playing online, and let's say you are out there playing in the park, or you're playing, against another, in the rec or something like that, you hear all of that unbelievable toxic BS as well. Stuff that you probably wouldn't hear in person, to be honest with you. Like a lot of these things, these kids wouldn't say in the same room as you. They're just saying it because they're free to speak and say whatever the hell they want on a headset. But yeah, I'll say again, there's just nothing that beat. I love this question, and I've talked about it. I've talked about it numerous times on past podcasts as well. Whether it be with siblings, whether it be with friends, et cetera, there is no better experience in gaming than being in the same room and enjoying that together. And that's just the way I look at it.
So you're saying that it's not as fun to buy VC and buy clothes?
Yeah, see, no, absolutely not.
Oh,
I
hater.
stay away from
What
that
a
scene, and you
hater.
know it.
Yeah,
Now, you
well,
and
yeah.
I know, right? You and I, you live in Australia, okay? I'm here in the United States, and we obviously, you and I can't play local. Like, we just can't. So we have to find a workaround. And I think that one of the things I talked to you about before this call is it would be nice over the next couple of weeks if you and I find a way to connect and play some of these games against each other, maybe 2K17, maybe some of the older lives, et cetera. And maybe we upload those videos to YouTube if we find the time. Like, you and I have to do that,
I
right?
agree.
We have no work.
I think we should mic up for that as well. I think it'll
Also,
be
it's
better.
nice. Yeah, I think we can mic up. I think it would be, like I said, I think there's certain reasons why it's a good thing to play online. Like, you and I would never be able to play otherwise if
Exactly, yeah.
that wasn't an option. So I'm not saying that online play and, having that option is a bad thing. I just think the lack of encouragement to play local co-op, and the lack of games or local co-op or local against, and the lack of games out there that you can actually do so, which there are not that many in on PS4. On that generation of consoles, and I'm assuming that's going to be the way it is on PS5 and Xbox Series X as well. That's the concerning part, and that's the unfortunate part, in my opinion.
It's the way games are at the moment, unfortunately. I say unfortunately, the unfortunate thing for 2K is that they with their online experience, they don't have the matchmaking, they don't have a lot of the quality of life features that they need to have for a proper competitive online scene. So it's not as good as it should be. So sometimes it is more fun to just play online with a friend, head to head, or indeed, if you can play couch co-op, local co-op. It is, that's very special as well. And again, playing with or against friends and family that share your interests in basketball games or gaming in general makes us old heads to say it. But we do have those memories of growing up doing that because, of course, online wasn't as big of a thing. You had LAN parties, you had modem to modem play for Duke Nukem and Doom, etc. And that was kind of fun back in the day as well. It was a novelty for sure. But certainly getting together with friends and family and playing like that is kind of a lost art.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you this. If you were promoting a game, let's say Andrew Begley is creating his own basketball game, and you're promoting the game and you're in the creation process as well, how would you go about promoting local co-op and local multiplayer? Would you advertise? So I brought this up, and I just think this is something to think about. There was a commercial from, I want to say it was 1992, No, actually, it was the NBA Live 95, I think. Yeah, the NBA Live 95 commercial.
Oh, yes, where we tweeted that recently, yeah.
Advertising, the marketing for NBA Live 95 for that commercial was Chris Mullin and Tim Hardaway, I want to say. I can't remember. Was it Chris Mullin and Tim Hardaway?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Mullin and Tim Hardaway sitting in front of a TV, both with controllers, playing local against each other. That was the advertisement. They were marketing that local play, that local multiplayer. If Andrew Begley was making a game, I know what I would do. Would you market it like that? Would you do some marketing that shows people in the same room playing against each other or on the same team? Would you market? Would you do commercials like that? Would you show video like that on social media? I still would. I would still market.
I like the idea of commercials that highlight. You know, we get the OMG trailers and the Momentous trailers every year and whatnot. They look fine, everything. Gameplay from cinematic angles. Always makes the game look like $1 million. And as we look at it cynically, you and I, and say, there's going to be a lot of legacy issues, aren't there? And of course there are. For me, marketing my ideal game, and we talked about our ideal game a couple of episodes back, I would like to do a series of commercials that shows up a bit of everything. Like, I would like to do that multiplayer commercial. Then I'd do the online. I'd do the franchise, the dynasty. I'd do the career. So I'd like to do a series of commercials, vignettes, whatever. Because one thing I think that would really emphasize is that every part of this game has been worked on, has had care, and is a valid way to play. Because there is so much gatekeeping, there's so much infighting in the basketball gaming community these days that it's ridiculous. And who plays my team? Actually, a lot of people. Who plays in my career? Again, a lot of people. One of the most popular modes. Whether they play the NBA side of it or the connected experiences, they are playing it. So I don't want there to be any kind of shame or stigma on any of the modes. So I would do a series of commercials that highlight all of these features and say, and also we have all these and we have retro teams and everything else. I would try and highlight everything in this series of commercials, and you'd release them throughout the previous season, and you'd have them randomly once they get to TV spots, because of course they do have TV spots still for 2K, so people could see, oh man, there is so much to this game. Oh, I might check out some other stuff as well. So that's what I'd do.
It's okay to have fun, and it's okay to play what you want. People need to know that. You know, the other commercial that I was thinking of, sorry not to get off track again, but we're talking about marketing. Remember the NBA 2K10 promotional commercials where it's Derrick Rose and Kobe Bryant playing in the same room? They're playing against each other?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember that? How cool was that?
Yeah, stuff like that, absolutely. Awesome.
Yeah. So I'd still do that, too.
So, yeah, we'll do our best to keep that kind of... keep advocating for that. And I think people should advocate for these other experiences, because while online is important, it's not the only thing about games. It's why people still flock to the show for its franchise experience and whatnot, and why people still like My League in 2K and My Career and Play Now Online and Blacktop. We'll be getting to Blacktop. We have a question about that. We'll get into that in a future show. Shout out to Mace. We do have that one in the bag. But thank you once again to both Nate and to Kid Cash for those questions. I hope you enjoyed us talking about them. Again, it's always fun to get on here and talk about a few different topics in the mailbag, Derek.
If anything, the best thing that came out of this is Nate kind of motivated me to throw on the PS2 version of NBA Live 2001, and maybe I'll upload a video. So, yeah, appreciate that.
And if somebody has a Avita Sabonis copy to sell cheaply, check it up on eBay. Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
But that is all for the mailbag this week. Thank you once again for those questions. If you'd like to get involved with the mailbag moving forward, you can send in your topic suggestions or questions to podcast@nba-live.com, or also hit us up on our various socials or in the forum, or indeed the comments on the bulletins of the podcast. Basically, any way you can get in touch with us, Derek, we're open to those questions and topic submissions.
Yeah, I love it. Like I said, you know, now I'm re-motivated to open up NBA Live 2001 and give it another go. And maybe, like I said, I'll upload a video to my YouTube of gameplay of the PS2 version. So thank you, Nate, for the question.
So that has brought us to the end of this week's show, episode number 369 of the NLC Podcast. We thank you, as always, for tuning in. The NLC Podcast comes out every week on the NLC, surprisingly enough, nba-live.com. We're also on all the major podcatching apps and platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, to name a few. Search for NLC Podcast on those platforms, look for our logo, and that will be us. If you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please feel free to leave us a review, hopefully a positive one. But as long as you're tuning in each and every week and enjoying the show, that is the main thing. And since we mentioned that you can get in touch with us on social media, Derek, where can we get in touch with you?
So definitely check out Holding Court with D for Three. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, CLNS Media, Amazon Audible, and all different platforms that host podcasts. That's where we talk about Real Hoop as well. You can reach me on Twitter, where I'm the most active, at D4384. On Instagram, D4Three, YouTube, D4Three, and over on the NLSC, D4Three.
Once again, I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. The NLSC itself is on social media, of course. The NLSC on both Twitter and Facebook. Instagram is NLSC Basketball. YouTube is youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. And of course, give it luck to the NLSC itself, NBA-Live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week, so thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.